We next have GraphNet, Inc. versus Retaurus, Inc. Can we have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Joseph. Joseph Schramm of Fisher Broyles on behalf of GraphNet, Inc.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Carl Gierken of Alston and Byrd on behalf of defendant respondent Retaurus, Inc.
Thank you. Feel free to take off your mask while you're addressing the court during your argument.
Good afternoon, Justices. May I reserve 2 minutes of rebuttal time if necessary?
Yes.
May it please the court. GraphNet seeks a new trial on all damages, not solely on nominal damages. And this court's decision in New Way versus Hyman Beck, it should control and should compel that result, because this case repeated the same error present in New Wave. Happened 3 times here by instructing the jury that it could award nominal damages to compensate GraphNet for injury to reputation. As a result, this case raises the same concerns as in New Wave, because nobody can say what impact that improper nominal damages instruction had on the jury's $0 award for labeled actual damages. Because as explained to the jury, the issues of nominal and actual damages were not fairly separable from each other. As a result, as in New Wave, the fairest and most appropriate result here is a new trial on all damages. Just to briefly recap how we got here, there was a jury trial and the jury determined that defendant Retaurus defamed GraphNet. That liability finding is uncontested on appeal. Retaurus defamed GraphNet. And the jury awarded $800,000 to GraphNet. Subsequently, the trial judge entered an order remitting the $800,000 to $500. And it did so over GraphNet's objection. Although the appellate division correctly reversed that remitter because it was entered without GraphNet's consent, the appellate division did not go far enough. Rather, after it overturned the remitter and then determined to vacate the $800,000 award to GraphNet, New Wave required a trial on all damages, not just nominal damages. Now, this case, there's 3 categories of damages available for defamation. This case only involves 2, actual and nominal. And as the court said in New Wave, there's an important distinction between those two. And there's really no dispute that actual damages compensate a plaintiff and nominal do not. Nominal vindicate the plaintiff's good name where no actual damages are shown or can be shown, at least in some circumstances. Here, however, the jury is told the opposite. They're told repeatedly that they could award nominal damages to compensate GraphNet for injury to GraphNet's reputation, at least 3 different places. They're told this in the original instruction. You are permitted to award nominal damages to compensate plaintiff for injury to reputation which you reasonably believe may have been sustained. They're told this again in question 6 on the verdict sheet. What is the amount of nominal damages GraphNet is entitled to compensate GraphNet for injury to reputation which you reasonably believe is sustained? And they're told this again the next day while they're deliberating. They come and ask if there was a typo in question 6, and they receive a clarifying instruction reiterating that in response to that question, they should award damages to compensate GraphNet for injury to reputation. The jury's job was to consider the evidence and to measure the damages to GraphNet's reputation, and it did its job. It awarded $800,000 for injury to reputation, and it did it under the label of nominal damages in response to question 6 that was instructed to do. It did it while awarding 0 actual damages. Now, $800,000, it's not a small token amount. And it strongly suggests that the jury really meant to compensate GraphNet for injury to its reputation. And that's a recoverable damage in defamation as actual general damages. In fact, in the Marrero case, which Retaurus claims is right on point, the judge gave a nearly identical instruction to the one used here for nominal damages to describe actual general damages. Now, if the jury knew it couldn't really compensate GraphNet with nominal damages for injury to reputation, or even if it knew that those damages after the fact might be capped at $500, no one can say for sure what impact, if any, that would have had on the actual damage award. GraphNet certainly believes it would have had a major impact, and GraphNet should have the opportunity at the new trial to prove that. I want to make one additional point about New Wave, which is that in the briefing, Retaris attempted to distinguish that case because there was an award in that case of both actual and they called it presumed, but described them as nominal damages. But I'd like to highlight that that was only true for one of the three plaintiffs in that case. That was only true for New Wave, not its principals. And the appellate division, it noted that the jury specifically rejected an award of actual damages to the plaintiffs Buckner and Ryan, despite awarding them $50,000 and $150,000 in presumed nominal damages. And nonetheless, the appellate division vacated the entire verdict, and this court affirmed. And it did so because the nature of the error, the same error we're dealing with here, it goes to the heart of the jury's task to award different categories of damages for different purposes in different circumstances. And in New Wave, this court held, because it's unclear whether the entirety of the jury award was influenced by the inadequate instruction on the proper roles of various categories of damages and the circumstances under which they are available to plaintiff, the cleanest and most fair resolution is to vacate the entire award and remand for a new trial on damages. This case is no different. This case should have the same result, a new trial on damages. GrafNet simply asked this court to apply its precedent in New Wave to this case.
Does that conclude your opening statement?
It does, yes.
Is it your view that the current model charge, which was used, excuse me, by the trial court here, has problems and contains some self-contradictory or conflicting provisions within it?
It is, yes. The model charge is 8.46, and there's a section, I think 8.46D is the one really under scrutiny here, and it has back-to-back sentences that say you can award these damages to compensate, and then goes on to say they're not damages to compensate.
It's so inherently contradictory that no one objected to it at trial.
Why
don't you explain that to me?
That is true, Justice Albin. These were agreed upon instructions and nobody objected to them. That is correct. The parties relied on the model instructions, and that's what
everyone
happened.
Walked over the cliff together.
Yes, and perhaps didn't realize what they were walking into until the verdict came back.
But now that we have a light shining on it, is it something that the court should be directing correction about? And if so, what do you recommend?
I would suggest that it certainly merits consideration by the Committee on Charges. And it may be as simple as replacing that word compensate with vindicate in the first sentence in 8.46 and leaving the second piece in about not designed to compensate.
You talk about D, right? 8.46D is what you're talking about.
8.46D, yes. I'd like to grab a copy so I can refer to it, if I may.
I got it right. Go ahead.
And it's this sentence here that says, for these reasons, you are permitted to award nominal damages to compensate plaintiff for injury to reputation, which you reasonably believe he, she sustained. And that is, it is inherently contradictory. It's, I think, about as contradictory as you might get in back-to-back sentences.
All you have to do is eliminate the first sentence, and then you have nominal damages or a small amount of money. They're not designed to compensate a plaintiff, but are awarded for dot, dot, dot.
Perhaps that's the best way to address it. It may be. I just offered one way. But here, it wasn't just that instruction. That error of compensating through nominal damages was repeated in jury verdict question 6. That's the question that came back with $800,000. And even when the jury, we believe, raised some question about it, they were instructed that, no, this is correct. You use this to award for damages to reputation that you believe occurred. Our position here is you can't keep
amazing,
half of the award.
You know what's amazing? That this particular, what you're claiming, deficient charge, is being charged every day in courtrooms across the state.
And perhaps that's why the issue came up in New Wave, and perhaps that's why the issue came up again in this case.
What should the jury be told about nominal damages?
I think the jury should be told that that nominal damages are not designed to compensate. They can be told that nominal damages may only be awarded where there are no actual damages. That's the requirement from WJA. And there are other things about nominal damages depending on if you have libel or slander and what proofs have been adduced that I don't know are particularly pertinent here. But I think that's what they should be told. And the small amount.
If you take out to compensate, five lines up from the bottom, if you just take out the word to compensate, does that make the charge now consistent with nominal damages? Just take out the compensate and say, so it would be, you're permitted to award nominal damages for injury to reputation, which you believe, and then go into a small amount. If you just take out those two words, would that make the jury charge pass muster?
Nominal damages to plaintiff for injury to reputation, which
you're... Oh, you don't need it because plaintiff's in parentheses. You don't have to use that, but... It just reads, for these reasons, you're permitted to award nominal damages for injury to reputation, which you reasonably believe to be sustained. Nominal damages or a small amount of money damages. Would that be...
I'm not sure that that is the best way to do it. I think maybe getting to the purpose of indicating the name... And highlighting the fact that it really is a small amount. Early on in the case, we had the issue before the change in the law of remitter and additor of, was this remitted to the smallest possible amount? And the trial judge said, I'm looking to Punitive Damages Act, maybe doesn't exactly apply, but I find it probably caps them at 500. It's unclear if that's, to me at least, if that's actually the case. So perhaps something in here should say that too. If they really are capped, perhaps it should tell the jury. You can't go over 500 here. It's a small token amount.
The federal charges say token amount or $1. Is that something you're suggesting?
That may be an appropriate way to do it. I mean, if they really are capped, they can be capped. As long as they don't say what you said here, is they can compensate.
And I want to be more charitable. You want to cap it at 500 rather than $1. In the state, we're big spenders.
The $499 is not a big thing. I think in federal system or in some states, there's a law that caps it at $1 or it says they are $2. It's a little bit more amorphous here, but it's not $150,000 as seen in New Wave. It's not $800,000.
Why should it be the $500 amount when the punitive damage claim, which was in the second amended complaint, was essentially withdrawn by consent of the parties, recognized by the judge? So why should there have even been any reference to the punitive damage amount, or nominal damages?
I don't believe there should have been. We don't believe there should have been a remitter at all ordered here. It should have been once the judge determined that $800,000 couldn't stand as nominal, couldn't be sort of recast as what we view it as actual general damages, then the judge should have ordered a new trial on all damages, which is what we're seeking here today.
You want us to, whatever the amount may be, you're suggesting we set a cap, a small cap, so that the jury will know the range in which nominal damages operate.
I believe that would be helpful. But is it necessary? Perhaps not.
Is it a cap that you're suggesting, or is it simply an example or guidance?
Really just an example. My position here is not so much with the cap on nominal damages.
What does that mean? An example.
What's that?
What does that mean?
That it may be appropriate to tell the jury that there's a cap on this, that it can't exceed.
Oh, cap. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm following up on this question because suppose there's dispute as to whether or not it is a cap. I mean, under the punitive damages award, yes, nominal damages have a cap. But outside of that setting, where's the cap?
It's very difficult to determine. We scoured, and it wasn't something that was briefed in the petition, but it was briefed early on in the appeal. And we found cases where there had been maybe 1,000, 1,500, maybe even more, maybe somewhere around 10,000. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard to say where you get out of the idea of nominal. It might be relative to the wealth of the parties, but it's more commonly understood to be $1, $2, 2 cents, $500.
Well, then what's wrong with the language? It says a small amount. I mean, that gives some guidance.
It does. It does give some guidance. I mean, here the jury heard that and they awarded $800,000, and we think that's due to a combination of other errors.
Right.
But there are other cases where it's occurred, right? In New Wave, for example, there's $150,000 and a $50,000 award.
The jury here was hearing other language telling them that this nominal amount went to compensate, which suggested a different calculation.
Absolutely, and that's why we firmly believe that you can't You can't keep the actual zero and throw out the nominal and only send us back on nominal, because you, we should get a fair chance on a clean slate with proper instructions to make that case.
The problem with small amount is that it means different things to different people, right? A gazillionaire, a small amount is going to mean something different. If we want to probably stop trips up to this court and giving people the benefit of making these arguments, it may be worth our while to set some sort of contours. Do you agree?
I do. It seems correct that there is some cap to nominal damages. Exactly where that is, I'm not even sure that it varies case by case. But I haven't determined where that cap should be, and you know, our issue here is more focused. I understand your concern is here with the cap and the instruction on nominal. Ours is on recovering what we feel are the actual damages.
Understood. We're pressing you on a slightly different point.
Can you explain to me why, based on the jury charge and the jury instruction, the verdict sheet, and the jury's answers to questions 4 and 5, why you believe that you should get a trial as to all damages, not just the nominal remitter type damages?
So the actual damages, I think it was 5-1, no showing of actual damages in question 4. Question 5, amount of actual damages, 0. Question 6, amount of nominal damages to compensate for injury, $800,000. The reason we believe is the reason articulated very eloquently in New Wave, which is that where you have actual damages, which are designed to compensate, and the jury put $800,000 in a bucket that's not to compensate, but was told it was to compensate, with proper instruction, they very may well have put that in the other bucket. Nobody can say that for sure. We can't get inside their mind. We don't know what they relied on.
But it is indicative that they were 5-1 against that. And it may be, of course, it's dangerous to speculate on what goes on in a deliberation room, but it may be that someone on the jury thought they knew what nominal meant and they didn't, and there was some other category of damages that were not compensatory there. And that is, it is, not only is the jury instruction contradictory, but the result here is contradictory.
And that award, it's been essentially wiped out by the appellate division, first by the trial court and by the appellate division. We're sent back, whatever the cap is, it's probably around $500. So we're going from $800,000 to $500,000. And we think it is indicative of their intent to really award damages here. And we're not asking this court to award the damages. We're simply asking for another chance to present that evidence of damages with proper instructions and let the chips fall where they may, just like in New Wave.
Are there any further questions? Is there anything you'd like to add for the court?
No, Justice.
Thank you. Mr. Gerken.
Good afternoon, Justices. Forgive me, let me take my mask off. Thank you for your time. As your honors are aware, Retaris did not appeal the trial court's remitter award or the appellate court's ruling. And Retaris respectfully submits that the key findings of those courts were correct, namely that a nominal damages award of $800,000 shocks the judicial conscience and should not stand, and that the remitter was appropriate. Number two, we believe both the trial court and the appellate court concluded that the jury instructions and special verdict questions taken in their totality were not confusing, and as your honor noted, had not been objected to, in fact, were agreed to by both counsel, and that there was no basis for a new trial on damages. Finally, the appellate division, citing this court's Oriental decision, found that there should be a trial on nominal damages. We're prepared to proceed with a trial on nominal damages. If the court were to do anything in this case, one thing the court could consider is whether or not there's a need for trials on nominal damages. where there's supposed to be a small amount. But in any event, we're prepared to move forward with a nominal damages trial. Your Honors, what I'd like to do is address some of the key facts, and I'd like to address the key arguments of my colleague on behalf of GraphNet. The key facts are these. There was a five-day trial on a defamation case. There was a Telecommunications Act claim that was dismissed during the trial. There was no objection to any jury instruction. In fact, as I said before, there was agreement as to those. And the other key fact I submit is that there was no confusion by the jury at all with respect to the issue as to whether any actual loss had been sustained by GraphNet. And I say that, Your Honors, because of the three key questions we've been talking about. Question four, special verdict question four, has GraphNet shown by a preponderance of the evidence actual damages that it suffered as a result of the statement made by Retaris? Answer, no. Question five, what is the amount of compensatory damages, in parentheses, actual damages, GraphNet is entitled to as a result of Retaris's defamatory statements? Answer, zero. Question six, important to focus on the preamble of question six, which also appears in the pattern jury instruction. It starts out, in the event that you find that GraphNet is not entitled to actual damages, GraphNet may recover nominal damages. And then there was an award of $800,000. We submit that was error, and the courts below so found that. But we submit that these questions make crystal clear that there was no confusion about the issue of actual damages, whether actual damages were incurred. So respectfully, ordering a new trial on actual damages would ignore the considered finding of the jury in this case. And Your Honors, it does bear noting that with respect to the issue of waiver and the issue of consent to the jury instruction is no small issue. The court has found in a number of the cases that we cited, even in criminal cases where the liberty of a defendant is at stake, that a failure to raise an objection to a jury instruction constitutes a waiver. And the reason is clear. We're not supposed to, as lawyers, to lie in wait. We're supposed to give the judge the opportunity to provide a clarifying instruction to remedy any potential issue. No party raised any issue with respect to these injunctions. And in the totality, the judge conveyed exactly what the law is. As my colleague mentioned, where there are no actual damages, compensatory damages are not available, that's the only time you can award nominal damages. And then the nominal damages are a small amount. Much is made of this penultimate sentence that uses the word compensate. That's nomenclature that people use. You could have said vindicate a right, but the compensation in a defamation case where there is no showing of actual loss is a judicial declaration of a violation of rights plus a small nominal award. And that's what was conveyed to the jury. So there is no reason we submit to disturb the jury's findings in that regard. Your Honors, there's an argument that the jury instruction was somehow confusing. And I think I've spoken about that to you. No confusion as to actual loss. When I read the special verdict questions, very clear, the jury found no actual loss. There's an argument that this case is on all fours with Neuwirth. It is not. Remember, in that case, there was a jury determination that there were actual and nominal damages. There was an issue of confusion. There's no issue of confusion in this case. Three separate questions all talked about nominal, talked about whether actual damages had been shown, and in each instance, the jury confirmed that there were no actual damages.
Counsel, there was a question asked of the court during deliberation that seemed or could be argued to indicate some jury confusion from the composite instructions that were given here. And I'm referring to the one, the question that appears in 5T, page 144, where they asked, how much money does, put brackets, plaintiff seek in damages, and how do we come up with that amount? And as I understand this record, the judge instructed them to rely on their recollection of testimony and come up with what they believe to be an amount, if appropriate, that is fair and reasonable. There was not further elaboration on the instruction, as I understand it. Should not we be concerned about that?
Your Honors, respectfully, no. Recall that the judge turned to both counsel before she gave that clarifying instruction and asked counsel if they agreed with it. They did. And I would submit to you, Your Honor, the only thing that, and this is my argument, we'll never get in the minds of the jurors, but I that's why I keep going back to the questions. That's clear. But my argument would be the jurors couldn't ascertain any damages, any compensable actual damages. And that's why they asked.
Or maybe they just looked at the contradictory language in the charge. They were smarter than everyone else. They looked at it. Okay, none of the attorneys could figure it out. Judge couldn't figure it out. They looked it out, and they asked a question. Now, doesn't that make sense? Because you don't get $800,000 for nominal damages unless you put in the charge nominal damages is entitled to compensate for injury to reputation. That makes sense.
Your Honor, I don't want to debate that point because I don't know what the jury was thinking. I think it showed that they couldn't tell based on the facts and what the evidence that was submitted. There was not a single document submitted to the jury on damages.
Do you think that that charge to the jury is correct?
I think in its totality, it is correct.
The nominal one. So you wouldn't change it one word. The part that says, what is the amount of nominal damages GrafNet is entitled to compensate GrafNet for the injury to reputation? You think that's just fine?
Your Honor, in a perfect world, if I were a legislator or if I could write the instructions, I might do it differently. But as a litigant before you, Your Honor, what I'm urging you is that an affirmance is appropriate here because there is no evidence of confusion.
Well, I think $800,000 for nominal damages may be some evidence of confusion.
Your Honor, I respect what you're saying, but that happens in other cases. We've cited numerous cases where there were hundreds of thousands of dollars in nominal damages awarded, and there was a remitter to $1 or $500, the Extech case in Florida, and I believe there's others. And that's just an indication that the jury didn't get what a small amount was. And that's why remitter is available. And that's how the judge applied it in this case. I would submit to you that this worked out the way it's supposed to work out.
Well, this is what your adversary is saying. Entitled to compensate for the injury to reputation, $800,000? Okay, he's calling it a bucket. Let's put it in that bucket because actual damages, I mean, we've got this option. We can put it in this bucket or that bucket. That's what we want to give. And your adversary is saying it's reasonable that the jury might have thought that that was a fair amount to compensate for injury to reputation, just as it was read to them in the charge and also in the jury verdict sheet. And the term nominal, well, that's a pretty general term. Go ahead.
Recall, Your Honor, that the term nominal The very last sentence does say it's a small amount. And the issue here is that the jury was instructed very clearly on what actual versus nominal damages were. And recall, in a libel or a defamation case, even if there is just a finding of defamation and no actual damages, you are entitled to presume damages. And there are cases where there has been remands, like in the Marrero case that's been cited, for the award of nominal damages. And that's exactly what happened in that case. So you are entitled, if you have defamation but without showing actual loss, you are entitled to some element of damage. Now, whether we could wordsmith this, I think we could all try and wordsmith it better.
On its face, counsel. It says to compensate plaintiff, for these reasons, you are permitted to award nominal damages to compensate plaintiff for injury to reputation, which you reasonably believe he or she sustained. And then the next paragraph is, nominal damages, a small amount of money damages that are not designed to compensate a plaintiff. Isn't that an internal inconsistency? One, at first it says to compensate plaintiff, and then it says not to compensate plaintiff?
Of course, Your Honor. And I think that the second sentence taken in totality, my argument is that it modifies the prior statement. And that the compensation here is just being used as your suggestion earlier might have been better, but the compensation that's been used in the pattern instruction talks about vindication of a right plus a small amount of damages.
You said it modifies the term privacy?
I would respectfully submit, Your Honor, that the final sentence clarifies the prior sentence, the penultimate sentence. The one we've been focusing on, you're permitted to award nominal damages to compensate the plaintiff. The very next sentence is, in the instruction, nominal damages are a small amount of money that are not designed to compensate a plaintiff, but are awarded for the infraction of a legal right, where the loss is not shown or the right is one not dependent on the loss or damage.
So why do you say the compensate the plaintiff phrase is modifying privacy?
Well, my point is that it just clarifies that it says that it's not designed to compensate the plaintiff, but is there to vindicate a right. But I understand your issue with this, Your Honor. Your Honors, my point is this: as a litigant, my belief is that the jury understood the instructions and made explicit findings of no actual loss.
Counsel, going back to the discussion we had previously with regard to the language and whether there should be a cap. So I think we could agree that the terms small amount, nominal amount, those are pretty general terms. And, you know, with a jury looking at two corporate entities might think $800,000 is a small amount for these companies. Do you think there should be some sort of cap or limitation, or as counsel suggested, an example given to the jury to give them an idea of what is meant by small or nominal in this instance?
In this case, I think where punitive damages are sought, that the statute should apply. It should be $500. And that's what the jury
How can it apply when the punitive claim was essentially withdrawn?
It was not withdrawn, Your Honor. We were.
I thought the parties conceded that the punitive claim would be dropped from the second amended complaint. Am I understanding this record wrong? Because that's important to me.
That is incorrect, Your Honor. We were talking with the judge right before the jury came back about whether we would have to give a punitive damages award instruction.
And you didn't.
No, because there was no finding of actual loss.
I thought it was because there was that the claim was not being pursued.
No, the one claim, the Telecommunications Act violation, was not being pursued because there was a directed verdict as to that. But the libel, the defamation claim, rather, was being pursued. And there was a claim for punitives in connection with that claim.
And that was a live claim when this went to the jury.
Correct, Your Honor.
The only reason they didn't award punitives was because they found no actual loss.
Correct.
And you think that the jury perfectly understood what they were doing because they answered four and five to your satisfaction. But when they answered six not to your satisfaction, then they were like blithering whatever.
I'm not suggesting that they were blithering idiots, Your Honor, and I understand your point. But this is one of those instances where they didn't get nominal damages right. It's not an instance where they were making a determination of actual loss.
Well, that's the big question. That's the $88,000 question or whatever. Is whether or not they confused all of it. And that's what New Wave talks to, is whether or not the error infected the entire damages award.
I understand that, Your Honor. And my point to you is I can point to the best evidence we have are the special verdict questions that talk about actual loss and the jury coming back and saying none, zero, and then awarding nominal damages only because there had been no finding of actual loss.
And can we infer from the fact that if they wanted to award $800,000, they would have done it at four or five if they thought there were actual damages? The fact that they said no on those and then didn't do it till question number six, can we draw any inferences from that that they were confused about nominal, but that they truly did not find any actual damages or proof of any actual damages in four or five?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. I don't think they found
any. The order in which they're set up.
Correct. That's exactly how it's set up. I thought it was a logical way to do it. It was consistent with the instruction. I understand the issue that you've raised with respect to that one sentence, but I think in the totality of the instruction, there's no reason to disturb the trial court's finding or the appellate court's finding, the lower intermediate appellate court's finding.
Are there any further questions of counsel? Counsel, if you'd like to sum up.
Your Honors, I think I have made myself very clear on the issues. We don't think there's a reason to disturb the lower court's findings. There are many other cases where there are large nominal awards that have been remitted, and in some instances, those courts have done so without requiring a trial, finding that consent's not required with respect to a nominal damages award. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you, counsel. You asked for 2 minutes of rebuttal?
Yes.
I'd like to emphasize, we view as the error here is the determination to essentially throw out and vacate the nominal award of $800,000 and leave the actual damages. And I agree that's because these issues, as they were explained, there was confusion. It's evidenced in the $800,000 award. It's evidenced by the self-contradictory instructions. And those issues were not fairly separable. And there's case law says when you order a new trial on an issue, it has to be fairly separable from the other issues that you leave standing. And that's the key here, that these were sort of confused in a way that, although we didn't object to the instructions and agreed to them, it would work a manifest injustice when you vacate that award. The second issue goes to punitive damages. I personally was not the trial counsel, but it was not my understanding that was live. I was looking at a charge conference in 5T, and there was discussion there being no reference to punitive, and also looking actually at the trial judge's remitter award that said, although it's not directly applicable here, I'm going to look to the Punitive Damages Act for guidance. So that indicates to me, at least in the trial judge's view, it wasn't directly controlled by the Punitive Damages Act. And those are the only points I have to add.
Thank you, counsel. Court will take the matter under advisement.